always burning since the world's been turning.
This is We Didn't Start the Podcast, an album-by-album rewatch of Billy Joel's all-over-the-map, quite frankly, career.
I'm Adam Ragusea. I don't really like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I still really do.
We're going to come back to that.
No. This episode, we'll be discussing Billy's 12th studio album, River of Dreams.
It's the end of the line for Billy with this one.
You know, I was listening to it, and it's a horrible thing to say, but I wouldn't have been surprised if this was a suicide note.
Jesus Christ.
Right?
I might have you topped on inappropriate jokes in just a moment, but yeah, it's where the river meets the sea.
It really is.
And it turns out that it's a river of just like sewage effluent.
It's not good. Someone called the EPA about this River of Dreams.
It came out September the 1st, 1993. Meg, what else there happened in 1993?
The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers debuted on Fox Kids with the episode entitled Day of the Dumpster, in which Power Rangers time traveled to 2016 and watched in horror as failed businessman Donald Trump accepted the Republican nomination for president.
The great blizzard of 93 struck the northeastern United States, shutting down airports and thus trapping me with my family in Orlando, which is exactly where you want to be when you're a sullen 11-year-old who just wants to listen to his Nirvana records. Anything other than more Billy Joel, Dad.
You'll appreciate it when you're older.
Our experience here has not borne that out.
The International Olympic Committee selected Sydney, Australia to host the 2000 Summer Olympics. Mm. Australia wooed the Olympic Committee with promises of miniature kangaroos and STD-free koalas for every voting member. Koalas got the clap.
Freaky creatures.
All right.
Oof. Also in 1993, Nirvana's last and best record, In Utero, came out. Awful as Kurt Cobain's suicide may have been, at least he went out on top.
Oh, gosh. 1993, the year Billy realized that having a hot wife and living through world events wasn't quite enough to keep him in songwriting material forever.
Not the solidest of years for Joel.
It wasn't a great year for Joel.
Declining solidity from this point out. It's basically just liquid at this point.
You know what that liquid is, too? Whiskey.
And sewage effluent. Now, Meg, last episode we were discussing the departure of one Dougie Steggs from the Billy Joel Band, Doug Stegmeyer, bass player. We were arguing, you said that it was your belief that Dougie had been fired prior to the recording of the Stormfront album, and I was saying that he had died. You want to know where I got that idea?
Where'd you get that idea?
I got that idea from this more recent Billy Joel interview on Sirius XM.
Doug Stegmeyer was with me in my band from the earlier 70s, mid-70s, until he died in the 90s.
Oh, R.I.P.
Okay, we're both wrong. Actually, all three of us are wrong, because Billy, he was not with you until the mid-90s when he died. You fired him prior to the Stormfront album, and then in 1995, he committed suicide.
Oh, God!
He shot himself.
Oh, wait, it's a dark episode, y'all.
Yep, we're off to a bad start. So listen to this quote that Liberty DeVito gave about Doug Stegmeyer in an interview on a website called 30 Days Out. Liberty says, quote, I can understand why Doug ended his life. It's hard to see someone else playing your parts, especially when it wasn't your decision to leave the band. You give your heart and soul to the music, and then someone says, hey, I don't need you anymore, but I'm keeping everything that you did.
Liberty, that's a low blow. That is a low fucking blow right there.
Really? You think so?
I think that's to blame Billy for someone who probably had, you know, long-term depression?
Yeah, but okay, here's where I think that Liberty has a point, and we'll get, I mean, Liberty had his own experience with this on this album cycle, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Billy has talked in many interviews about his songwriting process through the years, which was basically that, you know, he would go home, he would write some music, and then he would write some lyrics, and then he would go in with the band, and they would come up with the arrangements together. He did not bring in, like, arranged demos for the band. The band arranged the songs together. And what does that mean, arrange the songs together? Well, I think there's a rather incriminating piece of evidence right here in this Sirius XM interview. Shall we continue to listen?
Really talented guy, perfect bass player for the songs that we were doing, pretty much, you know, used my left hand on the piano as the guide for what he was going to play, which was exactly the right thing to play. I never had to tell him what notes to play. He always played exactly the right thing.
Yeah, okay. So you never told him what to play, which meant he was composing his own parts. Mm. And by the way, he wasn't always just doubling your left hand. And if we go back and listen to Only the Good Die Young with that wonderful, really melodic, really musical walking bass line that he did, that's Dougie writing that, not you, okay?
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girl, start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate.
You know, I come from kind of classical music where, you know, deciding what notes instruments should play is called composition, okay? And I realize that in, like, the legal world of popular music, that's not how it works. What at least the, you know, copyright law considers to be the song is the lyrics, the melody, or the basic skeleton of the melody, and the basic skeleton of the chords, okay? That's the song. And the person who writes that gets the publishing royalties, which is where the money is, right? And the people who contribute everything else get bupkis, okay? And that's unjust, you know? These guys gave, I mean, they were with Billy, this band was with Billy through the 70s. This whole, all his records, I know Billy Joel's name was on the record, but this was their career too. This was their life's work too, okay? Yeah. And they composed all of this stuff for which they got crap. Liberty talked in another interview that I saw about how they used to get like percentages and they used to get bonuses when albums would do a certain, you know, would do well or get past a certain threshold. And then right before they started playing stadiums, Billy switched them all to salary, just like flat salary.
But at that time, hadn't Billy really had some financial issues of his own?
Yes. Someone had stolen all of his money because he was being totally naive about it. But still, I mean, it's like they're going to go out and make gajillions of dollars. You couldn't give them some like performance bonus or something, you know, on the road. I just.
But who's surprised that Billy's not a good boss, to be honest? I mean, you know, that guy can't, you know, put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised he can't look around for anybody else.
Yeah. Got a bit of a selfishness.
He's got a little bit of a narcissistic streak in him.
Yeah. So that's what happened to Dougie Styx.
I'm sorry, Dougie.
Which then brings us to the River of Excrement.
Yep.
Where Billy actually started off the record producing it himself.
Yep.
Right? And playing it with his band. They, and in fact, they like they went and they built a little makeshift recording studio out on
the east coast of Long Island.
Block Island. Stock Island.
They got in the down.
Working Man's Island. Working hard scrabble Working Man's Island.
They got on the down Easter Alexa and boated out to their private island.
And they recorded some tracks. And I found the demos on the YouTubes, and it's like eighth generation cassette tape here, so like it does not sound good, but like they weren't, these weren't dot demos. He thought that he was recording the record out there in that boathouse or whatever the fuck it was, you know. And I honestly think these tracks sound pretty good. I mean, again, you got to compensate for the fact that the, you know, this is back in the days of bootleg tapes that this would have gotten shared around, so it's been degraded.
You could have had class. You could have been a contender, Charlie.
Big Liberty drums, you know?
Bass drum is on 2 and 4.
It just rocks way harder.
It does. It's like an anthem.
Those big drums, right?
Yeah.
Listen as it goes into the guitar solo. Listen to Liberty's drums. He's so on the 2s and 4s there.
He's rocking those 2s and 4s.
Jesus, you know. So anyway, he like made the whole record out on Working Man's Island. And
then it's such a better album.
It isn't such a better album, but then he decided, well, it's not like au courant enough or something.
Boo.
Boo. And so what does he do? He fires the last vestige of the Billy Joel band.
Yeah.
Fires Liberty.
He fires Liberty. And he, this was the producer's idea. He came in.
Who was
like,
this producer?
He's a dick. He's a total dick.
Johnny Moneybags.
Johnny Moneybags.
I imagine him just wearing like a satin baseball jacket or something.
Right. He's got like little bags of Coke in his pockets.
Yeah, and he's just like, babies, by the time we're done with you, you'll all be wearing gold-plated diapers.
Baby, we're going to make some rock and roll, baby. Come on, come on.
Oh, God. He fires the Liberty.
Mets. Jesus Christ.
So Johnny Mr. Met Moneybags says, you know, you got to fire this Liberty guy.
Yeah.
Who, like, not only is, like, a really great drummer, like, and honestly, a
he
great
really
drummer
is.
Who is, like, also just brings some, like, great just rock and roll cred to all of your songs, but also is, like, the one guy left in your inner circle who will tell you when you suck.
Right, exactly. He's, like, you know, the counterweight to Billy. Like,
yeah.
I feel like Billy can get really down in the dumps and, oh my God, I'm the worst. And then here comes Liberty, like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, let's just go rock.
Let's just go rock, sad man. Sap. Come on, you sad sack.
And it's like, I mean, we were talking, I think we started talking on the very first episode of this little series about the difference between talent and taste,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, Liberty is probably not a guy with, like, an astronomical amount of talent. I mean, he's a very good drummer, but, like, I assume he doesn't write songs or anything like that. I mean, he's not does not have a tenth of Billy Joel's talent, but he's gotten better taste. And there are a bunch of points through their career where Billy Joel came in with something that was just dreck, and, you know, and Liberty threw his sticks at him and said, do it this way, you
right.
asshole.
Right.
And Liberty was right every time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
He's the ball buster of the band.
Exactly. And now he's gone.
And now he's gone. And the reason Johnny Moneybags was like, you have to leave your old band behind. We need a fresh rockin' feel. We need, yeah. I'm like, how are you going to have this fresh rockin' feel with a band that doesn't know each other?
Exactly. Yes. And they were all, I mean, the people that Johnny Moneybags brought in were all, like, pretty amazing guys, like, great, great session players, like T.M. Stevens, the bass player, one of my favorite bass players, played on this record. But it's just, it all sounds totally out of place. It doesn't sound like Joel.
No,
you know?
It doesn't. It doesn't sound like they know each other. It sounds not overly produced, but it sounds produced.
Yeah. Shall we listen to a little bit of this? I think this is from their press kit, so this is a PR material, but it's like a little documentary about the making of the record.
Yeah, so this is Johnny Moneybags talking about his vision for River of Dreams.
All right, first voice is Billy, but then we're going to get to Johnny, who kind of looks like Cameron Crowe.
He really does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe he'll say his name and we'll know what it is, but if not, I'm not going to look this guy up.
No.
I don't want to give him that much effort.
Nope.
But as I got further along, I realized, I said, is this recording doing the material justice? It's more than
yes,
just my home.
Yes, it was.
Typical Billy. He's, you know, doubting himself.
So I spoke with different people about production. And I had a meeting with Dan Kortchmar.
Oh.
When I got there, I realized
Kortchmar.
What he was trying to achieve.
That son of a bitch.
Which was to get this homey quality, and he wanted to get away from the city and away from
Mr.
the music business.
Mm.
Huh? What do you think? And he goes, that's... Yeah, it's nice atmosphere, yeah, Sound, sounds okay. It's called him the next day, so what do you think? He goes, I hate the place. He hated it. There's no pizza.
So I said, listen, this is subjective. Everything I'm going to tell you is subjective. It has to do with what I think is right and how I hear you doing your music.
No one cares what you think, Kortchmar.
Nobody cares.
First class recording studio, I want to do it with my own musicians, and I want to hear the groove the way... What on
that's
to
what
hear.
Got me. I want to hear the groove the way I want to hear it.
Back by the idea, and I said,
first, listening to white men talk about the essentialness of the groove, like, shut up. Just shut up and sing your little song.
I want to be in an industry where you can say, I want to hear the groove the way I want to hear it.
Right, and that's like something that you can say in a meeting.
Right.
When the expenditure of funds is being discussed,
yep.
And you're going to be taken seriously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you're a white guy wearing a blazer.
Yeah. And out comes the eight ball
right.
of Coke out of the satin baseball jacket.
Yep.
Oh, Kortchmar.
Kortchmar.
There ain't much future for a man who works the sea. There ain't no island left for islanders like me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first song on this album is No Man's Land, which is all about urban sprawl, but it has this old school Attila feel to it. It's
a rocker.
It's a rocker.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like he was you know, exploring his angry young man phase again. Mm. And I enjoy this song.
I've seen those big machines come rolling.
What voice is this?
The quiet pines. The
apocalypse is upcoming.
Hey! Octave jump. He always does the octave jump to great effect.
He really does.
Raise up a multiplex and we will make a sacrifice.
We'll make a sacrifice to the multiplex.
Yeah. So clever and biting, Joel. Oh, my God.
He's like 50 when he wrote this.
Yeah. The chorus. So I do have sort of sympathy for this after talking to my father on the episode the other week.
Yeah.
Because this is a weekly show,
right.
Which it's not. But anyways, and he was talking about how, like, you know, he, in fact, clip here. Father was still alive. I don't know when the last time is that you were in Hicksville, but how does contemporary Long Island compare to how it was when you and Joel were just neighborhood street toughs?
Well, let's not push it to tough. When we first were living there, there was a sense of villages. You know, there was the village of Hicksville, and there was the village of Westbury, and there was the village of Oyster Bay, and there were these towns, and there was a sense of individual culture about each of them. But now what it is all part of the megalopolis, you know? Yeah. It's everything is the same thing from Maryland all the way up to Maine. And it's all one big street mall.
So, like, that gives this to me a personal sincerity that this song has always lacked for me, because I always thought that, like, when I first heard the song, I thought that his observations about, not when I first, I was 11 when I first heard this song, but, like, you know, later on when I was slightly more sophisticated.
It was a balmy summer.
That's right, exactly.
I was 11 years old.
When I first thought critically about this song, I was just like, these are really trite and, like, kind of hackneyed observations about urban sprawl, right? Like, we'll raise up the multiplex and make a sacrifice. Yeah, we're going to make a sacrifice to your corporate god. You know, that just sounds like something every asshole in your high school poetry class writes, you know?
It's like the angry young scribblings of a seventh grader.
Right. But to me, now knowing that, like, really his life was the journey of watching this place that he came from that was fundamentally a rural area with knots of little small towns, you know, spread across it, just grow into this giant conglomeration of garbage,
yeah.
You know, really ground zero for urban sprawl in the United States. That's his life journey, is watching that happen. To me, it gives the song a lot of resonance that I now kind of appreciate.
Well, there you go. You just got to do the research to enjoy Joel.
You can't walk into a blind, you know?
No, you've got to, you know, Wikipedia, a lot of stuff.
Exactly, that's right. Otherwise, it's your fault.
It's your fault for not understanding Billy.
He's genius.
Ah,
God. He's got a river coming out of that head. We'll get back to the cover art later.
Yeah, we will.
All right. Should we go on to the Great Wall of China?
Let's do it.
Have you noticed that in the song he correctly pronounces China? The Great Wall of China. Further evidence that Joel is making America great again.
He's just trying to be culturally sensitive.
So what is this song about?
I don't even know.
Oh, okay. I was trying to set you up.
I don't even know.
But I did the research.
I didn't love this song.
Oh, really?
I said we were going to do All About Soul.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a song that's about, what's his name, Weber, the brother-in-law that ripped him off.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's just like the whole thing is like, oh, we could have done so much.
I'm Marlon Brando.
Yeah, you jolly. You should have watched out for me. Which is, he's making a On the Waterfront reference there.
Yes. Because there's never an original thought in
exactly.
That river.
In that river of excrement. I like that little Billy Holiday voice he does there.
I like that.
Advice is cheap, you can take it from me. Is yours to keep, cause opinions are free. Nobody knows about the trouble I've seen.
really hearing the groove the way Kortschmeier wanted to hear it.
I want to hear the groove the way I want to hear the groove.
Much it takes too long to find out too late. Some words are not heard till after they're spoken. Your role was protected. Your soul was too defective.
You know, this song reminds me of, and it's awful to say, but Flight of the Conchords?
Yeah.
Like, but nice. So we've got
China!
China! Bring in the strings, y'all.
Okay, listen to it. If you'd only had a little more faith in me, mm-hmm. right? And then there's a line toward the end where he says, you know, they can only beat me if they get me to hate.
Right, yeah.
And again, like making it about like faith and righteousness and shit like that, it's like, no, you had a whole lot of money and someone else wanted some of it, so they took some of it.
Right, and okay? Your sketchy ex-wife's brother.
Yeah,
was your manager,
which like, so first of all, you made some bad choices.
Yeah.
And like, maybe you should just live with them and own them.
Right.
Okay. And again, it's like packaging. It's just like, it's just, dude, it's not that noble. You're not like.
It's not like some quest.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They can only beat me if they get me to hate. The man is not
no,
trying.
He beat
you're
you.
Not being suppressed. The man is not suppressing you. Your sketch brother-in-law who you said, hey, watch all of my billions of dollars,
right.
Made off with some of them.
Right,
okay?
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Billy.
And it's, why didn't you have faith in me? And why didn't you, I mean, it is, the way you frame this is...
very self-aggrandizing.
Very self-aggrandizing.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he settled on the Great Wall of China as like the pinnacle of...
Success?
Success.
It rhymes with diner.
Which really, if you can bring it back to the diner, then you're...
He's very food motivated, Joel is. You know?
Like a lab.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe this won't last very long, but you feel so right, I could be wrong.
We want to take a moment and acknowledge our first sponsor for today's program, the Borelli Brothers Map Makers for Restaurateurs in Bayshore, Long Island. The Borelli Brothers, show how authentic your restaurant is, add a map to it. Put a map on it.
How many times have I been in a restaurant and I'm eating the food, I'm like, you know, this is really great food. I just wish I knew what country it came from.
Yeah.
And that's when the Borelli Brothers come in.
And not just what country, but like what very stylized version of that country could it be? Where like really it's not drawn to scale.
No.
And there's like, you know, grapes represented on it that are like basically the circumference of Rome.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's more of an artistic cartography than, you know, just a straight ahead one. But yeah, it's I want to know where this pasta comes from. I want to know with a little star what the restaurateur's grandmother, what town she was from.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good because it distracts you from looking at like the pantry that they've got like out in the dining room,
yep.
where you see that it's just like some Japanese brand of pasta.
Exactly. It can't be Japanese. It's got to be Italian. There's a map on the wall.
That's totally what people in the late 80s and early 90s would be anxious about, would be the Japs getting in on the pasta market, because they were going to take over everything then, right? Like, I remember I've been watching...
destroyed the auto industry.
I love how on Star Trek The Next Generation, like, there's all of these, like ships and, like, people that they encounter with Japanese names, because in the early 90s, they thought that, like, by the time the 24th century rolled around, like, the Japanese would own all the tech.
Yep,
you know? And... that didn't quite happen, did it?
Plus pasta.
Yeah, exactly. Japanese pasta. But anyway, so
confused.
You look at the map on the wall.
And you're like, everybody, calm down. Exactly. It's from Italy.
That's right.
It's from Giancana, which is a town in Italy that the restaurateur's Stella Nona was from.
Did you just make all that up?
I just did.
Yeah, nice. We come now to the title track.
Yeah, we do. And how.
We're down there on the Delta.
Yeah, we are. Whew. Yeah, we are. You know what gets me is...
I can feel the humidity.
Is your hair curling up?
Yeah.
Yep. What gets me is that it's such a trope that whenever a white person, especially like a guy, starts to have a religious experience, there's black people there.
Black people come to sing him through it.
Right,
they're
exactly.
They're just there in the wings when they're you need them.
They're just there in their church robes.
Yeah, when you have a midlife crisis, you baby boomer white man, there's just going to be some black people there to just sing you right through that.
Because black people know from Jesus?
They know from Jesus.
I mean...
Yeah, I know. Something here comes the chorus, kind of. Even though I know the river is wide, I walk down. Sounds like a pre-chorus to me. I try to cross to the opposite side so I can finally find what I've been looking for. And I feel like I want chorus to go there, but there's not one. There's just a verse. And it's a pattern that we see through this whole record. I mean, it's really getting tired and lazy at this point. All these songs are just verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, done.
Yeah.
Like, there just aren't a lot of sections in these songs.
No.
That is the hallmark of a phoning it in songwriter, okay?
And this is his big effort.
Yeah.
This is the album's big push.
Yeah, do you like this song? I actually think, it's pretty.
It's okay. In the middle of it's one of those songs you hear on the radio and you're like, okay, this can stay on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, oh man, I love this song. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody say, this is the best Joel song.
Yeah. There's moments, again, several moments of sincerity in this album that have a lot of poignancy to me, even if they're not expressed in the optimal ways, right? Mm-hmm. And I've feel that his spiritual journey, although I'm really pissed off by the, like, you know, the African-American appropriation and all of that here, like, this moment that he's in of thinking about the end of his life seriously for the first time, that to me rings very true in this song.
Yeah. I mean, he just had a kid. He is going through this transition. He's not sure if he can still be a writer. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not sold on you, Meg.
Yeah. You know, I just feel like he's better than this.
You're better than this, Billy.
You're better than this.
Billy, you're just better than this.
And I really
okay?
want to
I just
hear...
don't... You're hanging out with those new boys, all right? And they're a bad influence on you. And you're just better than them, okay?
I really want to hear...
What happened to your friend Liberty? He was a good boy.
He was a good kid.
He was a good kid, Liberty was. And I remember his first communion.
He was so fat.
He was so fat, but he was banging on everything.
Twos and fours,
everywhere. He's a good kid. What happened to him?
I kind of feel
Why
like...
can't you be friends with him again?
I feel like it would, for me, this album would have a whole lot more, it would stick better with me if he had produced it. If this was his album.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And not just, you know, Johnny Shoulder Pads,
exactly. Because it makes it smack of desperation. It's this attempt to, like, be relevant to the 90s man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right. The sensitive 90s man.
And it's just kind of like, I could have forgiven a lot of its flaws, right, if it had been this, like, really authentic homemade effort that was really about where he is at the end of his career.
And
you know?
It breaks my heart because this is his final album and he couldn't even trust himself enough to the story he wanted to tell.
Right. Okay, so a related track on this record is All About Soul.
Oh, what?
And this one and I are gonna fight.
Sounds like Hall & Oates.
Yeah. Private Eyes. It's this exact same thing. That sounds... Oh my God. I'm gonna drop in like the E. Smith lead guitar part from Private Eyes right there, and people can hear that. That's the exact same thing just there.
We'll get some lawsuits going on.
She waits for me at night. She waits for me in silence. She gives me all her tenderness and takes away my pain. And so
again, what voice are you doing here, Joel?
Well, in River of Dreams, when he's trying to hit those high notes, if you watch that documentary, he blows through those high notes.
Oh, yes. Let's drop those in. Even though I know the river is wide, I walk down the streams.
Well, I carry it out by the river of dreams. Yeah. I mean, it's bad.
Yeah.
And he's in a tie for some reason. He's in, like, a dress shirt.
Don't try to sing in a tie, man. It's going to cut off your whole wind apparatus, you know? But anyways, yeah, it's true that it's like, you know, Billy's going through some changes.
He is.
Okay? He's going through his change.
He is.
Okay?
He's
and a lot
a
of things happen to your body around mm-hmm. this time. Hot flashes. you know, you get verklempt.
You get verklempt.
And your voice gets lower. And like you can really hear his voice is changing for the worse on this record.
It really is. And I thought maybe that was one of the reasons he gave up, because his voice really is gone.
And yet he keeps playing concerts because he likes money.
He loves it.
Yeah. But anyway, okay. All About Soul.
Yes.
What do you think about this song?
What really stood out for me was the Color Me Bad backing vocals.
Yes, Color Me Bad is doing the backups here. Let's try to find that.
And I can't help but again, blame the jerk of a producer.
He's just like, you know what you need to do to be relevant in the 90s?
I know these kids.
I know these Color Me Bad kids. All right? They're just going to dominate the whole decade.
Yep.
Okay?
They are like the new Beatles. Mm. I mean.
Yeah. And I talked to them, and I think I convinced them.
They're free on Wednesday.
They're free on Wednesday for about 15 minutes before they go. I got to go and be on the MTVs.
And open a mall in Orlando.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
And I kind of think, like, well, it's a matter of trust. It's a variation of matter of trust.
How so?
Song. Because it's all about soul, and it's the same thematically, like lyrically. It just seems like you could take this song and put it on Matter of Trust. But Matter of Trust is a better song.
It certainly is. to me, the most offensive line in this whole song is when he says, it's all about soul, it's all about the joy that comes out of sorrow. And it's like, Joel, I don't need you to white-splain soul music to me, okay? Like, Jesus, dude. Again with the taking the subtext and making it the text. Just sing a soul song. Don't tell me what the objective of soul music is. Okay?
No, like,
you're not from the Delta. I don't want to hear your thoughts on the subject.
It's like a syllabus.
Yes. Professor Joel right. doing an exegesis on soul music.
Right, exactly.
Hey!
We'd like to acknowledge our final sponsor for this series.
Wow.
I know, so sad. Bayshore Preemptive Burial, with locations across eastern Long Island. Bayshore Preemptive Burial. You're not dead yet, but why wait?
But why wait?
Why wait?
Who are you kidding?
I mean, you may as well get that good lot now, right?
Exactly. So what this wonderful service does for you is that, like, if you've really just thrown in the towel on life, you know, but you're just going to hang around for an additional 50 years out of habit... What they'll set you up with a nice climate-controlled mausoleum, okay? And look, this is very expensive, so this is why only people in the Hamptons can afford this, okay?
Right.
But like a nice climate-controlled mausoleum, and there'll be a nice sheet of plexi over it so that people can come by and see you, you know? And you know, you got your TV there, you can watch your stories, you can watch your programs,
CBS procedurals.
Exactly, that's right, you know. But you don't have to go through like the rigmarole of faking like you're still trying at life, you know.
Right.
You can just hang out in there, and then when you finally just, you know, the habit breaks and you just sort of pass away,
right.
You're already where you need to be, you know? And it's a really solid service that the folks at Bayshore Preemptive Burial provide.
You know, I think for Christmas I might get one for Joel.
Mm, yeah. I think he might already be there.
Oof.
What's the matter with the crowd I'm seeing? Don't you know that they're out of touch? Should I try to be a straight A student if you all think you think too much?
All right, deep cuts. A lot of them on this record.
So many deep cuts.
I want to play a song called Shades of Grey because I remember this song.
I'm just imagining Daddy Ragusio with a glass of red wine, and he thinks everybody's gone to bed, and he's listening to this album.
No,
and he's
no,
thinking
no.
about his youth.
That's not what it was at all. It was, we're in the goddamn car again, and Adam, we're going to listen to the last Joel album, and I'm going to tell you all about the places on Long Island that he's talking about. Actually, it's really sad because my dad, I remember this really clearly, us listening to this record for this first time in the car, and my dad was really disappointed at the end. He was just like, oh, Billy, not your strongest. We've stuck with you through the years. We've bought every record, and we'll keep buying them, but yeah.
Oh, you didn't do Hicksville proud this time.
Swing and a miss, Billy. Oh. Swing and a miss. But anyway, so there's this song on this record called Shades of Grey, which, you know, I was like 11 going on 12 and listening to Nirvana and Soundgarden and stuff. And like, and I was really excited that this was like a really guitar-y song that's like really angsty and grungy.
Yeah.
And I've deliberately not listened to it again until now. I did not, when we were doing homework for this, I did not listen. So I want to listen to this song and see how it matches with 11-year-old Adam's impressions of it as being like, oh yeah, Joel's finally getting like hip to what the kids like me are into. You know, he's getting some aggression.
Billy only does passive aggressive.
That's right, he only does passive aggressive.
not healthy aggressive.
Yeah.
Again, kind of a Tilly-y.
It sounds like Cream. It's just a Cream song. No doubts and nothing to fear. I claim the corner on truth. These days it's harder to say. I know what I'm fighting for. My faith is falling away. Cool little drum fill there. I'm not that sure anymore. Okay, here comes the big rockin' chorus.
Yep.
Shades of gray, wherever I go, the more I find out, the less that I know. Black and white is how it should be. But shades of gray are the colors I see.
Okay, so first of all, it's just a Cream song. I thought it was like some kind of grunge thing, but no, it's just Billy ripping off something he heard.
Bee-bee-doo-wop-bop-bow.
Boo-bee-bee-wop-bop-bows. Doing the shibby-dops out there on the corner with the boys around the oil drum with the flames coming out of it. Yeah. Just more shibby-doo-wops from Joel. Wow, those are stupid lyrics.
Yeah.
Can you articulate why those are so stupid?
Why they're stupid for me is because... These are not the sophisticated thoughts of a 50-year-old. These are...
Well, no, they are maybe, but you would express them in... Like, okay, so we're journalism people. That's like what we do for a living.
Right.
When we're not doing this, which...
Takes so much time.
You know, it's a really a labor of love, this,
it really
this
is.
Program. But it's like if I were editing this and that was a news article, I would be like... Avoid cliches on every single line. Shades of gray.
That is not how Billy works. He loves cliches.
It's like you can write a song about that subject, but like come up with like some kind of novel imagery, for right. God's sake.
And the thing is, he's able to, but he's just not, you know, if I was...
You think he's able to?
I think there's talent there. I think he's just scared of it. I would be like, Billy, trust your voice. If I were to give Billy a pep talk, I'd be like, Billy... You've been doing it for everybody else. What's up with you? What's in your heart, Billy?
Maybe he just needed a pizza.
Maybe he needed a pizza.
Hey, Billy, you see, we got some Chinese food over here. Right. If you want it, you got to come up with an original metaphor. You can't just go to Shades of Grey. Avoid cliches, Billy. Come on, come up with something fresh to illustrate this concept.
I got those tiny Twix bars you like.
They're up here, Billy. They're up here.
Give me a good analogy. But yeah, it does. And another reason why it seemed like a suicide album to me was you do have these like the shooby-doo ops and then the Attilas, and then he's like revisiting his own past.
Yes, the way that going through the stations of the cross.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn. And so like it's become meta because he is now using himself as a source. Like, he used to use everything else as a source.
Wow, interesting observation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And talk about meta, the last song on the record, Famous Last Words,
mm-hmm.
where he is just, and I actually, this is one case where I kind of admire the making the subtext the text and just coming straight out and saying,
right.
That's it, folks. I got nothing left in the tank.
Right.
Peace out.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's the most cheerful fuck off you'll ever hear.
I know,
hear.
Exactly. Sitting here in Avalon, where King Arthur went to die.
Right, exactly. He's King Arthur in this.
Summertime has come and gone, and everybody's home again. Closing down for the season, I found the last of the souvenirs.
You know, he lives out in the Hamptons all year around.
He does.
Doesn't leave when the season ends, okay?
Because he's like
real.
Stockbrokers.
Yeah.
He's out there fishing.
These are the last,
I actually like the song.
I have to see. That's why it takes so long to ride.
It really is good, the subject.
Just own it, man. I like that. That's good,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, we're finally getting, with this last song, some real honesty.
Yeah.
And if the subtext is text, then fine, embrace it, but make it good.
Musically, though, you know what this reminds me of? Like, on like these old keyboards you'd buy in the 80s that would have like pre-programmed like beats and chord progressions in them.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, like, where you just, all you do is you hit different keys on the keyboard and it moves the chord around, but the whole arrangement just stays and keeps pumping along.
Right.
That's kind of what this music sounds like. You know, it's so just,
I feel like this song could have been about a minute shorter because it's sort of the same thing, and musically it's a sort of like, but the thing about it, maybe that's what he meant to do, because there's no, it's all the, it's dun 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 dun. I mean, for the entire song.
Yeah, there's no climax. It's just anticlimax the whole time, yeah.
And I wonder, is he trying to tell us something?
That's way more sophisticated than I think we should give him credit for. I think he was just trying to milk the last drops out of the udder. It's like, can I repeat this verse and chorus three more times and get away with it? You're not getting paid by the minute, Billy.
Pay me, baby, pay me.
Oh, there's a bridge. There's an actual bridge.
Justice again.
That is, it all comes back to justice.
He's the most wronged man in history.
Doesn't give a damn no more.
Nope, he doesn't care.
He's so done.
He's so done.
He's so done.
And you know what else got me about this album was there isn't any piano really in the first, I think, three songs.
Yeah.
It's
there's
guitar.
A clavichord in the first song, but yeah, there's keyboard instruments, but no, he's not a lot of piano.
Yeah, it doesn't really sound like him.
Yeah, that's coming back to Korchmeyer. Korchmeyer! Is that what his name is?
We're going to go with that.
It sounds like the bad guy in like a skiing movie.
It does. I'm going to see your girlfriend.
God damn it, Korchmeyer.
Actually, no, he sounds like the stoner friend.
Oh, yeah.
Korchmeyer.
He ends
up with a science teacher. What?
But yeah, that's really Korchmeyer's offense to this record, was just taking something that really should have sounded like Joel in all its, you know, guts and glory,
right,
and made it sound like somebody else. And it's
because he wanted to hear the groove the way he wanted to hear the groove.
That's right, exactly. And when you're a mediocre white man
with a blazer,
you believe in your right to have things the way you want them and to be paid for it,
right,
handsomely.
Exactly.
I tell you, baby, oh. Only the good die young.
Time now to visit
Christy's Corner.
Christy's Corner. What's Christy up to this week?
Christy is on the Wendy Williams Show in this clip, and she's talking about her very literal interpretation of all of the songs that she painted for the River of Dreams album.
She's very creative.
She's very creative. She was in France studying art.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really, modeling is creativity.
It really is.
I mean, you're creating with your body,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know?
If she doesn't have a good day creating, she just doesn't have a good day. Mm.
I had no idea that you were extra talented. She did the artwork, okay, for Billy's album, Rivers of Dreams. How did this all come about?
When he would be making albums, I would be listening. I love nothing more than watching musicians, you know, working together. Mm-hmm. And I just, the songs on this album were so visual. And I just made a little sketch because it was very much like a sort of a stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
And I did this little sketch of this stream. And
who are these people down here? Is that you and Billy making love in Central Park?
That's gross. That's gross.
Yeah.
Down in the corner.
And this over here is like, Alexa.
Just moving along.
Future that if we're not careful,
Billy's never nude.
We don't do that. We don't do that.
No nature.
Nice.
And
this
is back in the cutoffs, Christy.
There are dozens of us. Dozens.
Gotcha.
Do you think that this album cover is bad?
No, I actually like it. I think it's very sweet.
It's very sweet, but it does look like your wife painted it.
It does. It does. And if we continue with the clip, we'll find out that an astronaut took this to space, this album, and took a picture, but she couldn't get back in touch with the astronaut because the... she calls it the little return address flap fell
in
off.
In outer space. A very nice
Christy
astronaut.
Says what? Yeah.
Nice.
What happened?
A very nice astronaut took his album and held it up with Earth as the backdrop and sent me the photo. And all these years, I wanted to say thank you to the astronaut.
Oh,
and
wow.
I lost the little return address thing.
So if he's watching,
in my mind,
how many astronauts are there in the phone book? Okay, you can't go down all 12 of them.
You couldn't contact NASA?
Just
imagine poor Christy. I'm sure she's very smart, but writing a thank you note in crayon.
Oh God!
I'm sure she's very smart, and very nice, but she's so smart and nice that I have to, you know. She would write thank you notes in crayon. Dear NASA. With an S pointing the wrong way.
So, Billy and Christy did split up.
They did.
In this album cycle. I'm not sure exactly where, but during the album cycle.
Yep.
And I read that he was playing a show in Westchester County or something like that.
Over in Tarrytown.
Over in Tarrytown. But basically the point of that is it was close enough where like he could have come home after the gig.
Oh yeah.
But he didn't.
Right.
It would have been like an hour long or 40-minute helicopter ride because that's how those people travel.
But he didn't do it.
He stayed in the hotel. Mm-hmm. And that's when she was just like, that's a little bit fishy.
Right.
And that's when someone called it off. Yeah. Somebody called it off.
Yeah.
And, what do we think about that?
I think she did the best she could in a bad situation. I think Billy is the type of guy who, if there isn't something to be sad about or destroy, he'll find something to be sad about
exactly.
or destroy.
Yeah. And she married some, you know, bald investment banker or something.
Yeah, it turned
out
really bad. Her marriage after Billy turned out really bad, but she's got two kids out of it, and I think she's married to somebody else now.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, or something. Christy's just being Christy, man. Creating. Follow her on Instagram.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
Hair is shiny as fuck.
Shiny as fuck.
Shiny AF.
I mean, someone needs to give that lady an award for the shiniest fucking hair in the history of fucking hair.
And this has been Christy's Corner.
Christy's Corner.
All right, time for our final power rankings.
Oh, power rankings.
Power bro.
Power rankings.
Where are we going to put River of Shit?
I don't know. I have like a sentimental... I mean... It's not good.
Is it better than Attila?
No.
Whoa, okay.
It's not better than Cold Spring Harbor.
Is it better than the bridge?
It's better than the bridge.
No, it's not.
Yeah, the bridge sucked.
I cannot consent to that. I would have to put it below the bridge.
It's not better than the Hassles. However, the Wolf has more creativity.
I'll put it above the Hassles and below the bridge. Could you get behind that?
I could get behind that.
Okay, so our final power rankings.
Power rankings.
Here, we can do call and response on this, and we'll count upwards, right?
Okay, great.
Okay. At number 15, all the way on the bottom, Meg's favorite record, Street Life Serenade.
God, that album sucked. Number 14, Hour of the Wolf.
Number 13 is going to be The Hassles' self-titled debut. Solid record from some young lads.
Number 12 is going to be River of Dreams.
Number 11. Yes. Number 11 going to be That Bridge to Nowhere.
Number 10, Cold Spring Harbor.
Number 9, Atura!
Number 8, It's That Piano Man.
7, Turnstiles, beginning of classic period, Joel.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That's good. It's real good.
That's so good.
It's real good.
That's a good album. Another terrible cover art piece, but yes. That's a good album. Number 6, 52nd Street.
Number 5 is The Storm Front.
Number 4 is Nylon Curtain. Why did that get so highly ranked?
That one was just...
Cold Spring Harbor is better than that album.
So much worse than I remember at that record. Number 3, Glass Houses.
Number 2, It's an Innocent Man.
And number 1, rightfully, Atop the Mountain.
The Stranger.
The Stranger. Fight us.
I know, right?
All
right?
You got a problem with us? Find us on Twitter and fight us.
Kick you in the face. Street Life Serenade sucked.
Standing in line. Father thought of Second World War. Oh gosh, I don't know.
So let's talk about where Joel's career goes from this river of shit.
Yeah.
So he stops writing songs and he puts out this record of classical material called Fantasies and Delusions, which is sort of clever, that name.
That is.
Kinda it's sort gets of self-aware. What's really going on here.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, track after track of perfectly competent kind of Chopin style studies that you could have written in school, and I just don't know why it needs to exist. It says nothing. It says nothing, you know? It says, I studied this music and I can come up with stuff that sounds exactly like it.
It seems to be like the ultimate vanity project. Paul McCartney did something similar to this.
Oh, no. You know what it's like? Sting's Lute album.
Oh, God, that sucks. That is the ultimate vanity. You bring out a fucking lute. You better have some goddamn number one records behind you.
So he does the classical thing. He starts doing these tours with Elton John.
Yep.
Let's listen to a little bit of that. That's a lot of jowls. A lot of jowls in that tone. And he's really reaching for the high notes there at this point.
He really is.
And physically, you can see how much he's like, his torso is just like straight up erect, and he's just like singing to the sky trying to get the last dregs of that note out of his body, you know? And it's kind of sad.
And it's, I think at these concerts that he gets super drunk and starts screaming the names of Civil War battles.
That happened, yes.
Yeah.
He totally broke down at one
Antietam!
Of these shows.
Antietam! Never forget Antietam!
And
that is the weirdest thing. That is such a Billy thing to do. He's probably reading like the Time Life books about the Civil
exactly,
War.
Exactly. The ones that like your grandfather, you get them for Christmas. Books about war, right?
Exactly.
Old men love books about war.
They do.
You keep it in the bathroom, you know, next to his large type Reader's Digest.
Yeah. And his readers, his little glasses.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And the note, old people always leaving freaking handwritten notes in bathrooms.
Yes!
Like, don't forget to replace the seashell shaped soap.
Right. The little like notepad, the little sticky pad.
So he's drinking a lot.
He's drinking a lot.
And it's really wearing on his voice. I mean, yeah. Drink will do that to your voice. And
I think at this point he was married to Katie Lee Joel.
He's got his child bride at this point.
She was in college, a senior in college, when he met her in a lobby of a hotel room.
Yeah, romantic.
And it turned out it just didn't work out. I mean,
who could have seen that
who
coming?
Who could have seen that coming?
I loved that somewhere in the 2000s, like after Elton and Joel had stopped touring together, Elton gave an interview where he said, like, I'm really worried about Billy and his drinking. Like, it really was a problem. And, like, apparently they haven't spoken since.
Yeah.
There was a New Yorker, I think a New Yorker profile, where Joel was asked about that years later. And he said, look, the truth is I like to drink and sometimes I drink too much.
And I'm going to end up with my car in your front yard.
Yes. He crashed his car in a lady's house and blamed it on 9/11. We're not making that up.
We're not making that up.
Okay. He continues to play these concerts. Like, he did this run at Carnegie Hall recently, where he was grossing. I think he was netting $2 million. Wow. You know, per show. And he just, like...
Now, is this the one at Madison Square Garden?
Oh, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. He's the first artist in residence there. Like, right. He plays once a month or something?
Exactly. He just, you know, once a month, he gets himself out of his preemptive burial.
He gets out of the tracksuit.
And suits up in his just big black suit. Like, yep. Every article of clothing gradually went black over this period.
It's very slimming.
Very just, like, nothing to see here, folks. Right. You know? So he's in, like, a black suit, black shirt, black socks, you know?
Mittens.
Yeah, exactly. Takes his helicopter out to Madison Square Garden, you know, just tries to wake himself up intellectually for 5 minutes to play some songs. Here's him. Actually, this is him at Bonnaroo. This is a more recent. This is a
wow. He went to Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
What an
sure it fit.
What an au courant kind of man.
Here he is playing the entertainer.
This next song is another one of those mid '70s things.
Oh, I don't know if you kids would have heard it.
1975. This shows you how much I know. This is called the entertainer.
Now listen to the key. Here, I'll advance a little bit.
The entertainer, the idol of my age. Make all kinds of money when I go on the stage. I see me in the papers.
They're dropping it a whole step from the original. Here's the original.
Later, and another long-haired band.
That's where
today
he's come.
I am the champion. I may have won your heart. Shows you what I know. Well, this is 75.
So the question before us, as we conclude our time together, Meg, is, was Joel right to throw in the towel?
I think Joel's whole life has just sort of been a tragedy because he has this amazing, he does have the mind of a writer, but he just doesn't have the instinct of an artist. He doesn't have the boldness.
Yeah.
That is,
but it took boldness to just say, listen, folks, I can't milk any more out of
this. Yeah.
I've squeezed every drop out of this sponge. I'm just going to go into cruise control here.
But again, you know, I kind of feel like if he did have the drive and the boldness of an artist, he would try to reinvent. I think it's the most Joel thing he could have done is just to shut it down.
But the problem is, like, he didn't shut it down. He's continued to kind of be this nostalgia act since then.
He
loves nostalgia. He always has. I suppose it's fitting. But it's like, you know, I mean, when Prince died recently, it was really sad, but I was kind of like, you know, it's actually kind of like people live too long these days with modern medicine, you know? I mean, it's like,
you know,
Prince
actually, that's true.
Died when he was still himself and he was still awesome.
Yeah.
He never went into like a sad phase, you know? I mean, it was just like he kicked ass until the very end and was himself. And Joel is just going to keep on sliding.
But are we asking too much of artists not to enter a sad phase, to always be on top of everything, to always be cool because we can't be?
Well, I suppose. But I also think that, you know, part of what this is about is that, like, you can't make money from records anymore. And you have to keep touring in order to make money in the music business. And so you've got all of these, you know, back in the awesome days of rock and roll, you know, bands would, like, great, wonderful bands would, like, you know, break, even, like, would do, like, one show a year and be mysterious about it, you know, like, it was just wonderful. But, like, now no one can do that. They just have to keep playing if they want to keep living the luxury lifestyle.
Right. Touring is the best way for them to make money.
Based on our exercise, do you still like Billy Joel?
I still really like Billy Joel. I think it's a more complicated like, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think whenever you go into something and you do some research on it, you find it's always more complicated. And
so if you were to like Joel on Facebook.
I would like Joel on Facebook.
Which face would you use, though?
Which face would I?
Because you've got those options now. You can use the heart. You can there's the squinty, smiley face. There's, like, the frowny face. The winky.
I would feel like I know enough about him now to be winky.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gotten into his head.
Yeah.
And we can be like, what's up, dude? I know you. I know you, Joel.
I don't think that I can, in all intellectual honesty anymore, say that I don't like Billy Joel.
Yay!
Because for all of his many missteps, if you just look at the list of like indisputably amazing songs that this man has written,
yeah,
you know, just absolute stone cold standards. That's a hell of a legacy for a single human being to leave.
Yeah, it is. And
you can't, I'm going to try to end on a baseball metaphor because that's what Stickball Joel would do. But you can't bat 100 every time.
That's true.
Did I do that right?
I think you did. Bat 1,000. No,
bat 1,000. You can't bat 1,000 every time.
Yep.
Wait, 1,000, that's like an aggregate measure. So it's, you wouldn't talk about individual times by saying you can't bat 1,000. You just can't bat 1,000 as well. Yeah.
Okay. Every time.
Every season.
It works
every season.
75% of the time, all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Billy had written just one song, and I never heard anything before him, before this one song, and after this one song, he would still be top five for me because of this song, and it's Lullaby.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we just totally unironically go out on Lullaby from River of Dreams?
I think we should.
Sweet little song he wrote for his daughter, Alexa, who she asked him, Daddy, what happens when we die? And this was his response. And that's very nice.
And if you're driving, you want to go to pull over and start, you're going to cry. This song is like tear gas for me.
Yeah. Just don't pull over inside a lady's house.
Don't do it.
And if you do, 9/11. Don't blame it on 9/11.
9/11. It was 9/11.
This has been We Didn't Start the Podcast. I'm Adam Ragusea, and I suppose I kind of like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I'm glad to hear that.
Good night, my angel. Now it's time to dream. And dream how wonderful your life will be. Someday your child may cry, and if you sing this lullaby, then in your heart there will always be a part of me.
Let's talk Joel on Twitter using the hashtag JoelHole.
JoelHole. You can find me at A Ragusea. Meg is at Meg Donahue.
At Donahue Meg, actually.
God damn it, Brenda.
Oh, man. I hope we have a blooper reel.
Now available from Time Life Books, a commemorative coffee table career retrospective of America's singer-songwriter, Billy Joel.
Buy it for the 279 high-quality glossy pictures of Joel. Invite your bowling buddies over to leaf through it on the foosball table in your rumpus room.
Read it on the can.
And she'll like it, too. I've always wanted to have Billy Joel over for dinner. Now I do. Every night.
She'll love the limited edition Christie's Corner Supplement. It's a dainty little book that comes free with your big man book.
It's called Get Your Hair Shiny as Fuck. Give it as a gift or save it for yourself and complete the collection, you pervert. But wait, there's more.
When you call, tell the operator you want the Time Life Joel phone, free with your order.
It's a phone shaped like Billy's head that'll connect you directly to the man himself. Warning, Billy will be drunk and Lars Ulrich may be standing in the corner encouraging him to request phone sex with you.
Time Life and associated entities are not liable for any property damage or injuries, physical or emotional, that result from late night drunk dials with Joel.
Call now,